Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, do you have sacred space in your life or spaces? And when I say that, what does it make you think about? And to help us think more clearly about sacred space in our lives is a woman who I know very well. She's not only an old friend, but my wife. So she's part of my sacred space. And Deborah Roth is an interfaith minister and a spiritual life and relationship coach. And she is such an expert on sacred space. I've watched her talk about it to many audiences. And so I'm really happy that she can talk about it to the Energy Stew audience. So Deborah Roth, welcome to Energy Stew. Welcome back.
Thank you, Peter. It's always fun to be here. It's been a while, I think. And I love what you said about my being sacred space. I mean, sometimes we talk about that what is home, which is sacred space, or it should be. And it really is where people that are important to you, that are special to you are. But the broader picture of that is, I mean, first, I think it's important to look at what sacred is. And I mean, I know that sounds obvious, especially to this audience. But one of the things I love to, when I'm writing and teaching about this, I love to look at the origin of words. And sacred, as we well know, means holy. And holy, the root word of holy is hal, H-A-L. I think it's a German word, which means whole, as in, you know, being whole. So when we talk about sacred space, when we talk about holy space, and of course it's going to be different for everybody, we're talking about space that you can be wholly and completely yourself, that you can express yourself and nurture yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. That's the four-legged stool of self-care, which is what we want to focus on when we're creating sacred space.
One thing that occurred to me while you were saying that is safe space.
Yes, and that's a big component.
Yeah, so I can't imagine the sacred space not being safe.
Exactly. Well, and I'll get to that too. Like I said, I like to play around with words. And I look at a whole bunch of different S words to help define what sacred space is. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But I think that the notion of sacred space, and I'd ask you all who are listening, watching, to think about this, where for you, and Peter asked that a minute ago, but really picture for you, where in your life have you intentionally created sacred space, or that you go to, that you, you know, could be in your home. A lot of us, we're in our homes a lot right now. But when you walk out the door, what is sacred space out in the outer world? Now, most of us, you know, have grown up in some sort of organized religion. And of course, temples, churches, synagogues, all of those spaces, actual physical spaces, can be sacred space, depending on how you've been brought up. A lot of those are not accessible right now. Although my own Unitarian Church creates a sacred space online, I create my women's circles, my new moon circles that I do every month, usually in my UU congregation's beautiful sanctuary. I've created that sacred space online. So yes, yeah, sacred space is a physical place. And very often when I ask people that, when I, you know, at the beginning of a talk about sacred space, I'll say, where in the world is sacred space for you? And a high percentage, I've never counted it out, but a big percentage of people will talk about some space, some place in nature. You know, their grandmother's backyard growing up, or I'm a tree person. So anytime I can sit under a tree in Riverside Park, in New York City, or trees anywhere, that's sacred space for me. And as you pointed out, Peter, it needs to feel safe. It needs to nurture us on every level. And I think when we're intentional about it, you can create, I mean, you can look around my office. I've got My office is filled with things that are special and meaningful for me. And I think that's a really important component of sacred space. You can be as formal about it, if you will, and create altars for yourself. I have an altar, you know, to this side of my desk. I actually have an altar at our bedroom, which Peter's seen. And an altar is simply a place, it's a focal point where you bring together symbols and objects of what's most important for you. People at work in traditional offices have altars that they don't think of them that way, but they might have a picture of their family or shells from a favorite beach or a beautiful rock or crystal. If you're in a formal office, it's still possible to create sacred space. I joke about it with my clients sometimes. We call it an altar in a drawer. So it's like a stealth altar. You can put, if you don't feel like there's certain things that are meaningful for you that you can put, you know, out on your desk so everybody can see, put them in a drawer. Especially since most of us are working at home right now, that's not as much of an issue. But I think if you think in creating sacred space, if you want to really be intentional about it, think about moving in a circle. Think about moving kind of horizontally. The circle, you know, the symbol of the circle is probably one of the most ancient symbols of unity, of wholeness, we were just talking about, of completeness. So if you're talking about even just creating a business meeting, it's a little tricky with Zoom because we're all very linear and we're in this grid. And I soothed myself at the beginning of this crazy time that we're in when we've been on, and I've been doing, as I said, my moon circles on Zoom, to not think of it as linear, because sacred space is really space that we want to be our most open, our most intuitive. And so I imagine all those faces on the screen as creating a web. And when we're relating to each other, I encourage people to pass, for instance, if we have a talking object and we've created a sacred circle, I encourage people to pass like this, you know, to the next person.
A lot of our audience isn't watching, they're listening. But we're on Zoom screens together. And so you're picturing passing something across the screen to the next screen.
Right, as though there's someone sitting next to you off screen that you're passing it to. And in that way, you create that sense of connection, of horizontality, if that's the right word, which takes us from this hierarchical place into this place where we're all connected. And that sense of connection is a really important piece of course, of sacred space too. So another component, so thinking circle, I mentioned a minute ago that when I asked this question, you know, where is sacred space for you, that I don't know, probably 80 or 90% of people that I ask that question do come up with a place in nature. If you're not outside, if you're not in your favorite nature place, when I'm not sitting under one of my trees or wherever your place is, then you can bring nature in by bringing the four classic symbols of nature, you know, back from, you know, the Greek philosophers, which are fire, water, air, and earth. Or if you subscribe in the Eastern tradition, there's five elements. But the four elements of nature, fire, water, air, and earth, you can have a feather, you can have that crystal, a shell, you know, just think of all the things. What did I leave out? Let's see, so shell, I left out fire, so I have a candle. So a shell would be water. So there is something very evocative when, even if they're symbols, I mean, chances are if you're going to create something like that, there are going to be symbols that are meaningful for you, like that, you know, like that shell I mentioned from a favorite beach or a beautiful rock from a hike that you went on. And the reason that symbols are so important when we're creating sacred space is that they are the language of the unconscious. So long after, I mean, our wedding rings or anything that you have that you've imbued with meaning, long after you consciously, for, well, I'm never going to forget what my wedding band means, but, you know, long at, when you're past whatever that the period was that you had this special thing, your deep unconscious remembers that. Just like we draw symbols from the dreams, we draw from the subconscious. We can feed the subconscious by surrounding ourselves with meaningful symbols. So that's another important element of sacred space.
I love that. And we can start imagining so much of what we have designated as important in our lives and refer back to those.
Definitely. And I think another, probably the third, so if we're talking about kind of images that evoke sacred space, we've got the circle, which we talked about, if you've got a space that you can do that. I learned early on in the pandemic that if I turned my laptop just like this, usually I'm sitting like this at my desk, but if I turn my laptop, oh, right, people can't see it. Okay. Yeah, if you're not looking at Zoom, in my office, I have a moon on one wall and a sun on the other wall. And when I turn my computer just right, I have the sun and the moon equidistant behind me, which is kind of cool. So look for those kinds of things around you. So we've got circle, we've got earth and nature, you know, connecting to nature, and then symbols. Those are probably the three most important pieces. And then how we bring that all together is in a bunch of different ways. Probably the easiest model to think about is activating all of your senses. So once you're clear that you have the intention, you want to set a clear intention, I'm creating sacred space in my office, I'm creating sacred space in my bedroom, you know, I'm going to go outside and figure out a way to, you know, create whatever sacred space looks like to me there. Then think about how it is that you want to activate all of your senses. So some of that's pretty obvious so far, right? Because we've talked about symbols. And so symbols are visual ways that you can activate your senses. Tactile, because if it is a crystal, or I mean, I've got all kinds of crystals around here, or if it is a shell, anything that you can hold and imbue with meaning becomes an amulet, becomes a talisman. And so if you meditate in your office, I've got these two calcite, I think, crystals that I use when I meditate, and they're right around my computer. So you've got touch, you've got the visual piece, taste. Anything that you can eat has a meaning attached to it. It can be, you know, herbal meanings or it can be, you know, food. Look up New Year food, for instance. You know, eggnog, we put cloves or cinnamon in. Those are abundance herbs. So look up literally everything. If you just kind of move your head around your space, your home, everything there has meaning. You wouldn't have brought it into your house if it didn't.
I wanted to say that one of my most sacred spaces is our kitchen. Mm-hmm. Which I spend a lot of time in, and I treat it differently than every other room. I actually am cleaning and arranging all the time. And it's really, well, it includes the feeling of it's safe and secure and benefits my health as well as my spirit. Mm-hmm. There's so many foods there that I prize, that I treasure. And so it really is, you know, a very, like, almost like a temple for me.
No, I think that's a great way to describe it. It's true. Because food and health are, I mean, they're important to me too, but they're life-changing and has been for you.
We treat the kitchen differently.
Yeah.
You use it more functionally.
Yeah, that's true.
And I really use it as a holy place.
Yeah. I think that, and what, I mean, to just think about it that way too, Peter, really gives people, it really opens up the possibility, literally just through the power of your intention. And I encourage everybody listening to do that too. I mean, Peter's just volunteered that the kitchen is a sacred place, you know, a sacred space for him. If you wanted to be super intentional about it, you could put some chimes in the kitchen. You could, you know, whatever, or just, acknowledging, right? But that's the point. I think speaking out loud, you know, I love symbols. I've got, you know, I've had friends tease me when they come into my office that it looks like a botanica because I've got goddess figures all over and I've got crystal, you know, I've got all kinds of stuff all over. You've got wonderful tankas hanging in your office. And, you know, so all of those things are meaningful to us. The other big thing, you know, in terms of remembering to activate all of our senses is music. And I know you don't listen to music all that much, Peter. I mean, I have it usually going quietly in the background. And I love to sing. I'm in a women's chorus. But music itself is a quintessential right brain stimulator. Mm-hmm. And our right brain is what governs our emotions, our intuition. It opens us up. And I have, you know, Sanskrit chants going all day. That's one of the things I love most. I have a couple wonderful mantra CDs that I chant to. For a number of reasons. Yes, music itself, when you're listening to it, triggers, you know, that right brain response. But then when you sing or when you chant, you're creating this vibration in your body that also is, you know, literally very healing and empowering.
Something, there's some noise in the background, by the way, something's moving. But what I'm realizing is that how important sound is to you.
Yes.
More than to me, I love beautiful music. I even once owned a manufacturing company.
That's right.
Musical songs for children, and we hired singers and producers, and you wrote a whole series of songs for it. But what I was realizing is that in human design, we have different food strategies that make our enzymes happy. And your food strategy is that your enzymes aren't happy unless there's sound around you. And so I think that goes to more than just eating. I think that goes to just
totally.
The force in you needs sound a lot around you.
Totally. And not noise. You know, like I'm not one of these people that, and I have a lot of friends this way that always want to have the TV on in the background, you know, especially if they live alone. That's not me. I don't want meaningless noise going on. You know, as I said, I sing in a woman's chorus. When we have real church services again, I'll sing in my choir again. I sing for one reason or an hour. I lead chants. I do this FaceTime live every Wednesday at 5, and I highlight a different goddess. And most of those at the end of the call, I'll share one of the many divine feminine / goddess chants that I have. So it really feeds me in so many ways, both listening to it and, you know, singing itself. So I wanted to circle back too. Did we hit all the, we talked about, hearing music. We talked about music being right brain, taste, touch, smell. Oh my gosh. The biggest one. So our sense of smell is truly probably the most evocative of all of our senses.
And that's why aromatherapy is so important.
Yes, exactly. And that's, and the reason for that is that it's directly connected to our limbic system in the brain, which is the seat of all of our emotions and all of our memories. So if you, like I, to this day, I think it's still around somewhere, Palm's hand cream will always remind me of my grandmother, who's been dead, well, I don't know, 40 years at least, probably more than that.
More than that, because I never met her. And
right. That's true. We've been together 40 years. 50 years. She's probably going to go on 50 years. A favorite one that I do when I'm teaching about the power of scent is that I suggest the people for a de-stressor to put it, to keep in their glove compartment or in an office drawer or whatever, to keep a bottle of suntan lotion. And when you're feeling, you know, freaked out about something, obviously it's going to work if you're a beach person. Whip out your suntan lotion and get a whiff, and it will immediately take you, you know, that's the subconscious, that's the unconscious working. It'll take you to, you know, some blissful beach time. So finding scents that are meaningful to you, cut grass, you know, that musty smell of wet leaves in the vault, you know, whatever it is. And of course, you know, as you pointed out, Peter, the whole art and science of aromatherapy. I don't have it happening so much now, but I have every essential oil under the sun, and lots of wonderful mists. I've got this one that lately I've been feeling like my malas, you know, my prayer beads that I use when I chant, and my those crystals that I was talking about when I meditate. Peter and I have a good friend who has this wonderful thing, this wonderful farm upstate called the Garden of One. And among other things, she makes these wonderful mists, and they're aromatherapy, and she, you know, she does all kinds of great stuff with them. And I've been using this all clear mist to clean my, you know, my crystals and my mala beads. So there's tons. Yes, you can find scents that are evocative, you know, in terms of memories for you. But then, and then there's lavender. You know, lavender is kind of the go-to, you know, healing, calming scent. Basil is a great scent to use for concentration. You know, basil like you eat, but there's basil oil too. When I was writing my master's thesis years ago, which was turned out to be the basis for the book that I wrote years later, which I can tell you about in a minute, but I had basil oil going all the time. At the same time that I had this very beautiful necklace that I had imbued with all of the qualities. So here's the touch piece, here's the symbol piece, along with, you know, mixing and matching all of these, you know, both the symbols and activating our senses. When I would sit down to work on my thesis, I would put this particular necklace on that I had imbued with the qualities that I wanted to bring to my writing. Eloquence, wisdom, humor, you know, there were a whole bunch of them. So that takes a certain amount of intention too. Sometimes you can just walk outside. And I mean, for me, when we were in lockdown in New York City, I sat under, you know, I would walk outside with my mask and socially distance. And I'd go over to, sometimes I went to a different tree than my usual trees in Riverside Park or in Central Park. And one day when I was just, you know, just overwhelmed with life and how crazy everything was. I went out and it was pouring rain, and I took my umbrella with me, and I put a piece of plastic down on the ground, and, you know, a plastic bag, and sat on it under my umbrella and had a good cry under this tree. That tree still, not my usual tree that I sit under, that's still sacred space for me. So you, just with the power of your intention, And through the actions that you take, you can create sacred space. And that's the outside piece. I wanted to be sure we got back, because you started the conversation, Peter, about the components. And I think of this often when I'm thinking about creating sacred space inside. I feel like you walk out your door. If you've got nature nearby, you can find sacred space anywhere. But inside, sometimes it takes a little bit more planning or focus. And so,
intuition.
Well, yeah, but you still have to have intuition's fine, but there's got to be structure around it too.
Yeah, but you start off by sensing what feels right. You
know, yes, exactly. And what's going to be right for you might not be right for someone else.
Right, you know, exactly.
My music playing quietly in the background could be very annoying to someone else. So looking at what sacred space means, that some of the things to think about when you're creating sacred space inside is that it's, so remember I said I like to play with words. So these are a bunch of S words. So it should be streamlined. So that means organized, declutter. When you declutter a space, you're doing that both externally to create space for whatever, you know, whatever you want to put there, but internally you're creating space for your intuition to show up. So streamline, get, you know, feng shui, get an organizer. Well, can't get an organizer in so much now, but, you know, apply that idea of creating, of decluttering. I mean, that's
an order that feels right to you.
Yes, exactly. But the idea is that you energetically, your system doesn't want to be in an overwhelmingly cluttered place. That doesn't feel safe and sacred. That's what one of the tenets of feng shui.
Yeah.
Another one.
You're more of a minimalist than I am.
Yes. Although you're getting, you do clean up periodically. the other one we talked about was that it needs to feel safe and supportive, good boundaries, close your office door when you want to meditate, turn off your phone, and turn off the notifications on your phone so it's not beeping all the time.
Well, I need to notify you that we're getting to the end of the...
Okay. The other two that I was going to say, which I think I've hit on, were that it has to be self-related. So remember, there are four S words that I think of with this. So we've got the streamline, safe slash supportive, self-related, things that are meaningful for you, and then stimulating. And that's stimulating all of your senses, activating all of your senses. So there's just a bunch of ideas for you to play with.
Let's find out more about you and what you have to offer.
All right. So my website is Spirited Living, Spirit with an ED, Living. And I'm on Facebook and Instagram, Rev Deb Roth, I think, on Instagram, and Spirited Living with Deborah Roth on Facebook. Although I do my Facebook Lives, when I do them, I've been doing on my personal page, which is just Deborah Roth. But I think you can get to that from the business page. A book that really brings in two things that I do. Circle of One, The Art of Becoming a Self-Centered Woman, is the book that came out of my master's thesis 20 years ago, and then wrote the book a little over 10 years ago. That you can get on my website, spiritedliving.com. And then there's a seasonal journaling, coloring, meditation book that I wrote with two dear coach friends. Called The Authentic Woman Playbook, Delightful Discoverings of Your Divine Feminine. I work with people one-on-one who are in big life transitions or and relationship, want to shore up their relationships. That's me, but you can see it all on my website.
Right, and I want to attest how wonderful you are.
Thank you. Right back at you.
Thanks for being on Energy Stew.
Oh, my pleasure. Always fun.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.